You're listening to The Big Interview, first broadcast on the 28th of June, 2015, on Monocle 24.
Hello, I'm Georgina Godwin, and this is The Big Interview, our programme where people with fascinating lives, incredible careers and great tales to tell sit down to talk to us about how they got to here, what really happened and what makes them tick. In 2002, my guest shot to fame as the winner of the inaugural series of the televised singing talent competition Pop Idol. 4.6 million people voted for him. His first track was released 2 weeks after the programme's finale and became the fastest selling debut single in the UK. The album went straight to number one, as did the next one, which went platinum several times over. His following records have also gone multi-platinum, and his most recent release, 85% Proof, entered the charts at the very top. He is, of course, Will Young, but far from being an instant celebrity, a pop singer but little more, he's a multi-talented performer, adding an Olivier nomination to his two Brits, writing his autobiography, putting his politics degree to good use by engaging in public debate, and being involved in a number of philanthropic causes. This is his Big Interview. Welcome to The Big Interview, Will Young.
Thank you.
Before we get to those life-changing events of 2002, I'm keen to get a sense of the type of upbringing that you had in Berkshire with your older sister and your twin brother. Quite a military background, I gather.
A military background? Well,
in terms of your ancestors.
Oh, my ancestors. Yeah, I mean, they're incredible. I've been finding out more and more. So on my father's side, well, his father was a prisoner of war in World War II, Australian, and he was captured twice. So he was in two different prisons. And my grandfather on my mum's side was an RAF navigator. But going back on my dad's side, yeah, they were all called William Aretas Young. So I missed out on the middle name. My middle name's Robert.
It's not nearly as exciting as Aretas.
I know, Aretas sounds so great. And they freed slaves in the Caribbean and then moved on to become governor of Tasmania. And my great-great-great-great-grandfather was knighted. Then his son did the same journey to Tasmania, and they were obviously very philanthropic people and pastoral people and, yeah, very wonderful people.
And is that something that's come down, do you think, through the generations? Obviously the wonderful people, but you're obviously no longer a military family, but a very solid, middle-class, Berkshire-based family from which has sprung this extraordinary talent.
Well, I presume you're talking about my father's vegetable garden there with the talent. Yeah, we're not a conventional family, I'd say, in terms of the way we are as people. I mean, we're quite anarchic, and Rupert and I went to my brother went to a very traditional prep school and then a military public school, Wellington College. But really, I always had a sense of my parents being very much out of the institution. So if we had a sort of parents' day, they would just take us up to London and we'd have a nice lunch in London and then miss out all the boringness and then come back when we had to do the roll call at the end, you know, and my dad would turn up in his gardening clothes in his old Mini that he'd done up, and then he got pulled over by the school security for speeding on the drive, and just my mum got drunk and jumped in a puddle and splashed someone's white dress. I mean, it was just sort of, they're very, weirdly, I was talking to an old friend and he was saying how much he loves my parents for being so different from other people's parents. And my friends always loved that. You know, we're very open, we talk, not perfect, but I was always very grateful for that because I went to boarding school. They were very traditional schools and it was offset by this kind of madness that is the young household.
Yeah. Well, talking about springing from the ground, your first performance is a tree, I believe.
Yeah, I said I'm a tree. Apparently in Marlborough Town Hall, there should be a plaque there, but there isn't. But they still talk about it as being one of the most moving performances and dramatic performances of the school nativity play.
We'll talk about despite that early success on stage. It was something that you didn't actually immediately pursue because you went off and did a politics degree.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I could have gone to acting college, to stage school when I was 13. I didn't want to do that. And then finished my A-levels and did politics. Yeah, I wanted to do politics because I felt like I want to know something about the world that I'm about to, you know, as I embark on my journey of becoming an adult. I want to know what's going on in my society.
Mm-hmm. Did you do any grim jobs while you were doing that?
Yes, I did loads. Oh, my God. I remember selling something outside in a shopping centre and it was some sort of digital channel, but I had fake boxes of these fake boxes of whatever it was that I was selling that I couldn't sell because there was nothing in them. And I didn't know what I was selling, but I had to wear a horrible yellow fleece that could not go anywhere near a naked flame. I had to rip out T-shirt labels in a T-shirt factory for them just to be sewn in again. And then I asked the head of the factory why, the foreman, why don't they just buy them like without the labels to begin with and just sew in the new ones? And he said, you and your fancy ways, get out. So I had to check the right product placement of certain stocks in various supermarkets. Yeah. Oh, it just went on and on.
Extraordinary, but all very good training for life alongside your politics degree.
Absolutely. Listen, if you can sell a cardboard box to someone, then you can certainly be a politician. So, in fact, what's the difference? I don't know.
But, of course, eventually you decided that you would, in fact, return to the stage and you went to Arts Educational.
Yeah, I always wanted to sing. I was very aware that I wanted a degree behind me because I was very aware that it's a difficult job to pursue. And then I thought, I can't go to London and just go to parties saying, yes, I want to be a singer. You know, me and 30,000 other people in London. Yeah. I'll go to Arts Ed and at least get some sort of training and probably a boost in confidence looking back, yeah.
And it certainly gave you that.
It really did. And I was only there for a term and I learned a lot because I'd entered Pop Idol, the talent show, and then went straight to Arts Ed. And then I was on TV at the end of that term. So I only did a term there. And I learned. So it really shows how great they were at teaching technique and confidence, yeah.
So I know you're asked this a million times, but we all want to know your Pop Idol journey.
Oh, it was amazing.
So you apply, and then yeah. What happens?
I applied when I just finished my finals in Exeter University. I sent in it was a phone line then, you had to call in. And then I posted the letter and said to my friend, I think I might win this. And he is now a great actor. He's in the drama course and I was doing politics. Then did all the various auditions to get down to the last 50. Started at Arts Ed, half term, got from 50 down to 10.
And did you have a sense by then? I mean, you said right at the beginning you thought you might win, but once you were in the audition process and you'd seen how talented other people were, did you still think that?
Yeah, I actually did. And I never would have said that. And it wasn't from a derogatory place of I'm better. It was just, I just had this real sense of my path, and I think it was a beautiful thing. And I just, obviously, as it started going on and I started getting audience reaction, I did get a bit more excited. I just felt like, yeah, I'm still in the runnings for this.
I mean, let's remind ourselves of what Pop Idol was at the time, because we had never seen it before. No. It was completely new. It was the very first series, and yeah. It absolutely gripped this country. I mean, it was absolute appointment to view television. Everybody was voting, far more than they do now.
Oh, it went mad. I mean, it was a talent show for one singer, which had never been done, and it grew and grew. 10,000 people then applied. I mean, that would be nothing now. And it just went to the point that we had buses with our faces on. We were debated in Parliament. You know, I remember meeting the political editor of The Guardian who was doing an interview. You know, I mean, who would do that from a talent show? No one would do that now. And people really sided. There ended up being two of us in the final, myself and Gareth Gates. We were such different people. You know, Gareth was from Bradford. I was from Berkshire. I remember people taking pictures of both our houses. And I think my mum was in her wellies outside. That was so embarrassing. Anyway.
Extraordinary, because people thought that he was going to win. I think the odds were that he was going to win. Now, as far as I can see it, what turned it for you in terms of the public vote was you standing up to Simon Cowell. Tell us about that moment again.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I completely forgot that. I mean, that was before we went to live shows, but it was televised. I just felt that he would say that I wouldn't be his cup of tea. And I felt, for some reason, I felt he would sabotage my chance of getting through. And I'd met him on another talent show. And so I'd kind of prepared how I was going to, you know, reply to him. And he said it wasn't very good. And I very politely, in my true politics student voice, said, I don't agree with you, which was so confident for me then, because I really wasn't a confident person. And I actually said, I don't think you can call that average. You know?
And he started to talk back and he said, no, I'm sorry, can you let me finish,
please? Yeah, I know, because I knew he was going to talk back. I talked about it with my dad the day before and I said, he will try and interrupt me. So I know that's going to happen because he'll want to stop because he's a bully. Bullies won't let other people talk. So I wasn't going to have that. I really don't like bullies. And I said that on the show. Maybe that's, again, tying to my ancestors. I really don't like people bullying other people.
Well, it won you tremendous audience support. Did it lose you Simon?
Yeah, of course it did. He hated me. But I mean, that's, you know, we were just such different people. And that was always going to be the case. And really, you know, that's probably the most important moment in my life. Really. It just made me a man.
And I think the audience really appreciated that, to see somebody stand up to this person who had been so horrible. And we were only just getting used to that, that's what happened on talent shows. We didn't know that that was kind of his shtick and he was going to do it week in, week out anyway.
Yeah.
But it was an amazing thing. Is the way that, I mean, I know that you haven't actually done a competition for a while, but you must be around them. Is the way that they are managed more cynical? Perhaps people are invited to perform and that sort of thing now. It's not so much a search for a star from absolutely anybody. You are starting from a definite place, quite advanced on the ladder.
I mean, even actually, to be fair, even on Pop Idol, I know there was a few people that were sort of asked to come in who were known. But definitely now, people are put together and it's all rather fake. But I don't think people mind because it's entertainment, you know. So I always say, let's just remember now, it's not about a talent show, it's about Saturday night soap opera entertainment TV.
Yeah. How valuable is it to the industry?
Well, that's really interesting. I'm about to write an article on that, about how any music always needs to rally against something. And I think when Pop Idol finished, for me, there was a huge backlash against it, which I guess must have then in turn come against me, because people were saying, you know, people have worked years to get into the industry now. You know, you just get voted in 20 weeks. The thing that I always said is, well, great, then people will bounce against this and suddenly you've got even more bands springing up. And actually what happened is music at that time moved from pop and bands became pop again, because there'd been a reign of pop music in the charts. So I think it can affect the industry, but actually in a good way, because with any action, there's going to be a reaction.
Yeah. Do you think it's harder for someone like you, who became instantly recognisable overnight, from someone who's actually grown their career organically?
I don't know, because I haven't lived that side of things. I've only experienced my experience. I think the most incredible thing was that I got to do a job that I always wanted to do. And that was, I mean, that's a dream come true. I mean, it really is. I signed the contract and I'm singing for a living. And that was pretty. And I paid off my student loan, you know, in one go. I mean, I was preparing for the next 30 years. So
you gave a talk at the Oxford Union on the subject of celebrity. So what for you is at the core of it? Paying off your loan, obviously. But what else does it mean to you?
Well, on a wider level, first, celebrity's always been around. There's a great book by Chris Rijack called The Power of Celebrity. And I mean, to be celebrated and known in court meant that you were closer and closer to the reigning monarch of the time, and people would be known of. For me, I like to be known of, hopefully, for being good at what I do. Celebrities certainly changed over the last 20 years when people could get more and more access to them. And then what happened is you saw a huge change, I think for me it was in fashion, when suddenly more and more known people from music and film started fronting campaigns. You don't often see a model fronting a campaign. It's a well-known face. Then you got talent shows and Big Brother and all these things where people were just famous for being famous. And that bred a whole new sense of celebrity, which is, you know, pretty vacuous. And everyone knows that. But the power of the celebrity is that they can sell products, basically. It's about money. For me, being a celebrity is about being known for being a singer and an actor. And if I can enact any goodness by being a celebrity, then I do. Mainly, you know, charity work.
It's quite different for you because you're essentially selling yourself, aren't you? You've got to be on top form all the time, physically, your voice. It's not like a painter or a novelist who can produce their body of work and then walk away. You're on all the time.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think as a performer, you need to be physically on, you know, and doing it. And then being the brand, you know, I am my brand ambassador because I am the brand. I don't find it hard because I am talking to you now as a person talks to a person. I will talk to you like this when this interview finishes, having a coffee with you, whatever. I treat people how I find them. I don't want to pretend to be, I mean, how exhausting would it be to pretend to be someone else if I had to do this? You know, I do a lot of talking with my job. I just want to be me.
Mm.
Very occasionally, I'm very aware of the energy it takes and I need to have time just for myself to just do nothing.
Mm. What I think people found really extraordinary about you is that you were able, unlike many reality or talent show winners, to consolidate your early success and actually to follow it up. Very shrewdly managed, as you say, brand will, basically. Managed by you or by someone else?
Well, a combination, really. I mean, I walked into my management office the first day and put down my box file and said, "Where's my desk?" And everyone stopped working and turned around. You know, of course I want a desk. I'm working with you guys. You're working with me. A combination of myself, Simon Fuller, who managed me for 13 years, and people all in that company, 19, Faye Farmer, who's been my day-to-day manager for 13 years. Yeah. Mm. More now.
But, I mean, very difficult to follow up that initial success. And I think you were very brave. I mean, your second record, if you look at the video, for instance, of Light My Fire, it's what an unlikely video as a follow-up.
Based on Chow Manhattan, you know, the film, Andy Warhol film with Edie Sedgwick, who was his muse, fascinating girl. And who would put that with a talent show winner? And that was people from 19. They saw me as something different and they put me with Bailey Walsh, who's a great video director, one of the top ones. And we made this amazing arty video. I mean, it was just incredible.
Really, really incredible. Now, you've talked about depression and feelings of low self-esteem. Has that always been an issue? I know that you were bullied a bit at school. Or is it something that intensified once you were getting adulation from crowds?
No, I think it was, I was bullied by a teacher at school, yeah, at my prep school. No, it wasn't linked to work. I think work is a separate thing that I learned to deal with, insecurities, frustrations, all that. I think I have, most of my life, had a low self-esteem and a sense of malaise, melancholy. And in recent years, I've done a lot to let that go and understand it. And it's very hard work, you know, looking inside oneself to see one's history and how things are formed in one's body and mind. Is a, you know, this society is not set up for that, you know. So it was tough going and necessary and essential for me to have. I want to be the happiest that I can be and the most content that I can be. And I'm not afraid to put the work in. So I've put the work in and I'm really pleased because it's got the results.
Using mindfulness.
Mindfulness. I studied somatics, which is a form of therapy, meditation, cognitive therapy. I've read some books by very great authors, Pierre Melody, Brené Brown. Yeah.
Because, of course, the cliche is that fame is a lonely place.
Oh, no. Fame's wonderful.
The thing is,
fame,
refreshing.
When I think of, yeah, no one likes a complaining famous person. I mean, my gosh, you know, no. I get to go, look, I'm in this wonderful studio, it's in this amazing, I would never have come into this building if it wasn't for my job. It's because of my job. It's not because of being famous. Yeah. You know, I am famous because of my job.
Mm. Talking about being lonely, I imagine that if you're a twin, you're never lonely. Is that true?
No, he's brilliant. Oh, my twin, Rupert, he's brilliant.
Are you close?
Yeah, really. He's my best friend. He is hysterical. He is one of the funniest men I know and just has all of us laughing. And, you know, he's great friends with friends of mine because we didn't go to the same university, but he sort of hung around. And yeah, I don't often feel lonely. Sometimes I do. Sometimes a hotel room, you know, there's something about a big hotel room being on tour. Occasionally I can get into the room and think, I'm a bit lonely. But then I just ring him up or Skype a friend, or if I'm in a relationship, chat to my boyfriend if he's not around.
Super Trooper lyrics are going through my head when you're talking about being on tour like that. We'll talk about your twin a little bit more in a moment, because I know that you work together with him on a charity and I want to focus on your philanthropy for a bit. But I want to ask about other collaborations first. Groove Armada, Elton John. I mean, working with someone of that stature must be extraordinary.
Yeah, that was great. I sung with him. Groove Armada was a wonderful tune I'd written with Andy Cato a lot, and History was a song that came out on their record. Very kind of small town boy, you know, very different type of singing for me. I mean, I think the best one was Burt Bacharach. That was pretty cool. He wrote a song for me.
That is really, really cool.
And I was
it?
Actually thinking about it the other day and I thought, oh my God, that's so cool. I can tell my grandkids that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And of course, a different kind of singing again was when you went and did Cabaret.
Yeah, and talking about collaborations, I mean, Rufus Norris, who directed it, now director of the National Theatre, Javier de Frutos choreographing it, Sean Phillips in it. It was just incredible. And I learned so much. And wow, I learned so much from that play, from that musical. It is just incredible.
You were nominated for an Olivier Award for that. So do you think it's an area that you'll pursue? Are you going to do another one?
Yeah, I really want to write a musical. And there's another couple of projects that I've been trying to get. But it took me 6 years to get Cabaret. So I'm like a stalker. I focus on the script or whatever it is, and then I won't rest until I get it.
Your autobiography, Funny Peculiar, is lovely. It's witty. It's insightful. Is writing an area that you're likely to concentrate on?
I started writing a lot more sort of journalist pieces and social commentary pieces. And actually, I would really like to write, I don't like the phrase because I think it's become a bad phrase, but a self-help book of some sort, but not as intense and as sort of murky as some of those books can be. And screenplays and, yeah, I'm always writing stuff. I mean, it's just such a wonderful outlet.
Mm. Now, recently we saw you on Sky Arts and you were presenting a great film about Magritte, Belgian artist. Is that another big area of interest for you?
Yes, it is. I think art programmes, I think sometimes we can be preached at rather than allowed in to a show and into a painter. So what I loved about learning about Magritte is I learned about Magritte. You know, I cannot lecture on Magritte, and I want to do more shows that encompass that and allow me to kind of learn what it is about a certain artist. And not just artists, you know, art is everywhere. Cars are art. Fashion is art. Mm. Buildings are art. It doesn't have to be confined to paintings.
So, now to charity, and we're talking about philanthropy. I know that you work with the gay charities. Is it right to call them gay charities? Is it discriminatory to call Stonewall a gay charity?
Well, LGBT now, because that's what Stonewall will cover. So it's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, transgender. Yeah, I work with Stonewall and I work with PACE, who help young LGBT people with mental health problems.
Right. Yeah. Tell me about your own coming out, because it was a kind of non-issue in your own family, but to the rest of the world, it was this big thing.
It was hysterical. I mean, I didn't, you know, I had to come out twice. I thought once was, building up to that was tough enough. Yeah, it was very bizarre. I mean, now it seems so alien, but it was a big deal. A pop star coming out at the beginning of his career. I just didn't want to pretend. I just thought, God, that's going to take so much energy. If it's a problem, then I don't want the people to have a problem with it listening to my music anyway. So it was a kind of like, fine. And the really interesting stat is that I came out, my next album sold over twice as much as my first one.
And you must have been so influential to so many young people who wanted to do exactly the same and then did.
Well, I mean, I do hear stories from people sometimes of helping them. And that is just, it's an honour and a pleasure. You know, I didn't think about that at the time.
Now, there was talk that you were forced into it by a tabloid who was threatening to publish. Is that the case?
I wasn't forced into it. I was going to say I was gay in a paper, but then the Sunday Mail, I think it was, with no surprise, that won't surprise you, wanted to run it. And so I thought, well, bugger you, we'll do it with the Sun. I think it was Sun or News of the World.
Yeah. But what's extraordinary about that is because of the actions of you and people like you, that kind of story these days, shock, horror, pop stars, gay, just wouldn't be interesting at all to anyone.
I don't think so. You used to get the so-and-so admits he's gay, and I always used to say, why is it the word admit? Like he's done something wrong. But, you know, it's important to remind myself that there were people like Sandy Toksvig back, I think it was in the 90s, when she came out, she got death threats and she came out in a broadsheet. It was really bad then. Mm. So it's people like that who have helped people like me. And so it's just a sort of onward going motion. But now, yeah, very much.
But it is onward going too in your campaigning for LGBT rights. Now, interestingly, you had a wonderful spat with Nicky Morgan. You had a spat with her. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, I was tweeting her to try and get a meeting with her about young LGBT people in schools and the derogatory use of the word gay and how that affects them. In fact, actually how it affects everyone. But she never replied to any of my tweets. So then I copied in three newspapers and she replied within half an hour, which I thought was quite insulting to me, actually. And then it took ages to meet her. And then I said, and she still wouldn't do it. And then I said, I'm going to stand outside the Department of Education with a sandwich board.
And you did?
No, I didn't, because then she finally got in touch again. But I will again, if this carries on. You know, she met me, I didn't get much from the meeting, and I will continue to harass government until people look at the stats, which are 23% of young gay people will try and kill themselves. 56% do self-harm. It's outrageous.
So how can that be helped, though? What can your campaign?
It's just got to be education. Language. Language in any discrimination is key. You know, look at racial equality. Look at sexual equality. It's all about the use of language. Language gets misappropriated and it needs to be reappropriated in the correct way. And it's just about education.
And that's something that you're clearly very, very passionate about.
I won't rest. I will not rest until I see it in schools that you don't get 63% of secondary school teachers thinking that it's not a problem at the moment, when you get 98% of young LGBT people finding it shameful to hear that word. Mm. I mean, it's ridiculous. People aren't thinking about the kids. The kids are the people, you know, they're going to be our future. And I don't want to see, you know, we're a liberal country. It helps everyone to be liberal. Everyone is different. Accepting difference is basically accepting yourself because no one is made the same.
Mm. Well, of course, and you've done many debates. You've been on Question Time. It sounds really derogatory, doesn't it, for a pop star? but let's talk about you being a pop star just quickly before we go, because I know that you changed record labels and your career has kind of, there's been a click, hasn't there? There's been a kind of change of direction, yeah, and a refocusing. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I've joined Island Records now and I'm with IE Management and they're wonderful. And Island just had a great time at Sony. Island Records just completely embraced music. And now I can do so many creative things in so many different areas because there's, you know, talking to you now, this wouldn't have been possible 10 years ago. So Island really embraced that. And I'm doing work and music that I'm incredibly proud of, videos that I'm proud of.
Oh, your new video is great. That's wonderful kind of anti-consumer message going on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's what you can do in pop. You know, I can do these videos that look colourful. And then also there's something there's a bit more pathos behind it. I've just done one based on Theseus and the Minotaur. And the new one for a song called Thank You is just wow. I'm so chuffed with it.
How much artistic input do you have? I mean, obviously you're the singing and dancing one, but do you plan it too?
No, I don't. Not always for videos. I'm a big believer in choosing the right person and then giving them the space to be creative and get on with what they're great at.
So 85% Proof went in at number one. Tell me about it.
It's brilliant. I mean, you know, 36, you know, I could be playing along with my keyboard in Butlins. To get a number one is fantastic.
How fabulous. Will Young, thank you very much indeed for coming to talk to me. You've been listening to The Big Interview with me, Georgina Godwin. I was talking to the fabulous Will Young. Tune in next week when I'm back to meet the acclaimed Turkish writer Elif Shafak. Thanks for listening and goodbye.